Today's daf in Masechet Yevamot, brought to you on this third day of the Omer from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is daf Mem Gimel. Okay, so remember, here's what we're in the middle of. We've been talking about the issue of Havchana, and we need to determine whether a child is a child of a first husband who either died or divorced, or in the case of Yibum, died and left her for Yibum. We had all kinds of different cases. But in all of them, we said we need Havchana, whether it's in terms of Gerut or in terms of Stam marrying a woman, and obviously in terms of Yibum, because over there it's going to be Gerim and Issacharis, not just a question of knowledge. So there were three Shitot, and we had Reb Yehuda, and we had Reb Yossi, and we had the Rabbanan. And the question was whether it's straight across the board, do we answer any type of marriage after an original marriage? Or do we make a distinction between a woman who was only Nisrusa, and therefore we're assuming she didn't get pregnant, and a Nisua, and also whether there was a question whether there's going to be an Avelut period, and is she allowed to go ahead and remarry during an Avelut period in the event that her husband died? Anyway, we'll get back to those shitas. And that was, we had the Rabbanan as the Tanakama, and we had Reb Yehuda, and we had Reb Yossi. And Reb Yossi was Nimuko Imo, and then we got into these complications about Reb Yochanan, who seems to contradict himself, because he says, on the one hand, Loka Kastam Mishnah, and then on the other hand, he passing against our Mishnah, he passing on Aliba to Reb Yossi. That led us to the conversation between Rebbe Abuhu and Reb Nochum. Reb Nochum was helping Rabbi Abu walk, and Rabbi Abu would lean on him when they walked. And we got into a question of what constitutes a Stam Mishnah, and how does the Braita, which comes after the Stam, and what's the interrelationship between them? Anyway, so because of that, we have now a tangential question, because it turns out in the middle of that walk, so here's where we are. Now we're in the middle of the walk with Rabbi Abu talking to Reb Nochum. And Reb Nochum does not just listen calmly to Rabbi Avos psak about what's considered to be the Stam Mishnah and what's considered to be a Machlokas V'Achokach Stam and so on. He asked him from a Beferish Mishnah, which you'll be so happy to remember because it comes from Kalim, your favorite Masechet, I am sure by now. So anyway, the Mishnah in Kalim, remember, was talking about two different types of combs. And one was a linen comb, and one was a woolen comb. And these are combs that are used in creating the cloth, so that we have to comb out the fibers. So when it comes to the flax, we've got a lot of messy combing to do, because over there, remember, we have to break open the pods, and we have to let it decay inside of the mishra until we can finally get out all of the hard pieces. So the combing over there is needed in order to break apart any pieces that were left, besides the fine combing, which would affect the fibers and the direction of the fibers. When it comes to wool, over there we have a much finer issue of combing. We don't have these heavy pieces of broken cellophane, so that from the original pod. But over there, we have dirt that we need to clean out. And we also have sometimes smaller pieces of wool that are just lying sideways. So we just comb it more finely. And that created a difference in the halacha of a broken comb. So remember that the way that the combs were made was that we had a piece of wood in which we inserted these metal teeth. The metal teeth were the comb, and then we would hold them with the wood at the base. So it says over there in the Mishnah, and this is what Reb Nochum questions Rabbi Abo about the way that he seems to be paskening like Stam Mishnas. So it says over there that if you have a Masrek Shal Pishtan, so you have a linen comb, Shenitlushinav, and you pulled out all of the teeth, you're going to replace all of the teeth, whatever the story was, and you left two teeth that were still in the wooden base. So then it's still considered to be a usable comb. And if it has two teeth left, so then it remains a kli. And because of that, it can be mekabel tuma. Because what we're talking about over here is it's going to be taking out big chunks of broken wooden material. So because of that, All you need is two teeth next to each other. Fine. Mashenkin will see that we need a better, finer comb for wool. But over here, we're talking about a wool that could do, a comb that could do something for the flax. And therefore, it's going to be mekabel tuma. Mashenkin, if you only left one of the metal pegs, which are the teeth of the comb, then it's tahar because it doesn't do a darn thing. It's not going to be able to take out anything. And because of that, it's no longer a kli. Now, if you took out the teeth in order to use, so then each one is considered to be a kli because that tooth is basically a pin, right? And a pin is always usable. You can use a pin to pin up a piece of paper on a board. You can use a pin to clean out your pipe. You can use a pin to clean out a lamp that you need. Whatever, it's very useful. So over there, there's no problem. So the separate teeth themselves are going to be makabel tuma. Now, of course, you'll need to decide because you need the makshava. This is a new kli. So, okay, so fine. You decide you're going to be using them for pins. So that would make a tummy. Even though they're each separate, and it's mashma, even though they don't have a base. As mashma, you pull them out, and now you're just using a pin. So that we're going to talk about later. But how about a wool comb? So a wool comb, now Rashi says that the wool combs are what we're talking about over there, and I'm sure you've seen these. A wool comb is not like a hair comb, where you've got just one row of pins. A wool comb is like, there's a handle, a little piece on top, and that piece has two rows of pins in it. And these are pretty common. You see them for various purposes. So over there, we need to have three teeth that are going to be next to each other because we're going to be pulling fine fibers. And over there, if you took out every other tooth, then it's useless, even though that would still be very good for flax, because flax is still going to get big pieces of the wood, is going to still be able to get caught between those broader spaces. That's not really useful for wool. So there it would be tor if you took out every other tooth. But if as long as you've got three teeth in one place, then it would still be tame because it still serves a purpose. That small area, that part, will still be able to get the dirt out and make the fibers straight. If, however, one of the outside teeth were part of the three, so Rashi points out, now this is a big riddle, and scientists have been working on this for many, many centuries. Why is it that the outside teeth on combs are always bigger? So the evolution of the comb has been a serious problem. But as Rashi points out, for God's sake, that's true around here too. So, okay, exactly why it's true. It's true for us too. If you take a look at any comb you'll buy in a store, it's got these thick things at the end, and then it's got the thin pins in the middle for some reason. I must say, I have been troubled by this phenomenon for many years as well. But that's the fact, as Rashi says. They're all like that. Okay, so if that's the case, so then if you can't include those outside thick pieces because they're not considered to be doing the job of combing, they're just sort of the frame for the pins that are inside. So if one of the three was the outside tooth, then it doesn't do anything, and it's too thick. So how about if you take out two of the teeth and you turn them into a pair of tweezers? So then they are going to be tamei. If you took out one tooth, and we're going to ask about this, why is this true? Why is it different in the wool than it is in the flax? But if you took out one tooth, if you made it into something that was usable, either for cleaning out a lamp or for pinning up a piece of cloth or material that you can now work on, so then it would be tmeya. So hitkina seems to mean that you put it into some kind of base that allows you to use it. Okay, so it turns out that the question of what the usage is, apparently, of one tooth is actually a machlokas. This Mishnah is only talking about one tzad of a machlokas, because there is also in the brises of Kalim that are mentioned in the Tosefta, there's a beferish machlokas between the Tanakama and Rabbi Shimon about whether a tooth that has been removed from the comb is tameh or not. So Rabbi Shimon is the one who says, yes, it's tummy. And over here it says beferish, just preposterous, as a das of the Stam Mishnah, that the halacha is that if any of these metal shinayim are taken out, that they're used for tummy. So Reb Nachman asks Rabbi Abu, so how do you explain that? Because you were saying, says Reb Nachman, Reb Nachman to Rabbi Abu, you were saying that we always go according to the das of the Stam Mishnah, and over here we have a machlokas in a brisa, and you said that we always only listen to the Stam Mishnah in that case, and we don't look at the brisa. That was the third question I asked you, and that we know that in that case, the halacha has been paskin that we do not follow that Mishnah. So according to you, the only reason we wouldn't follow the Mishnah is because it's cleared up in the Braita on this Mishnah that it was a Das Yochid, and that it's only Rabbi Shimon who holds that a single pin, what should call it, a single tooth from a comb is considered to be a pin. How do you explain that? Omar Lay said, Rabbi Abba, leave this out of it, please. Parmine Deahi, this is not Nogea. Because Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish both said that the way that this Mishnah has been taught to you is not correct. Zuei no Mishnah. There's been a problem in the way that we have the Girsa in the Mishnah. Because if you look carefully at the Mishnah, you'll see that it doesn't make any sense. The Mishnah doesn't make any sense. Obviously, something is going cuckoo with the Girsa. Why do I say that? My time of why does Rabbi Yochanan hold that? It doesn't make any sense. Om Ravuna Bar Manoch, Mishmei the Raviti, Berei the Ravika, because it contradicts itself. Look, you start off saying that if you have a wool comb, so you have Shaltsema, and you took out every other tooth, right? So you said, okay, there it's tar. But what does that imply? That if you didn't take out every other tooth, and what? And you had two teeth left next to each other, right? And that, then it would still be good. And then you turn around and you say, but only if there are three teeth next to each other. That doesn't make any sense. So first you say two teeth are good, and then you say you need three teeth. How do you explain that? Hadatani nishtarbu shalosh tame. Mashma only shalosh and not shtayim. So something's wrong with this Mishnah. So therefore you can't ask me for this Mishnah, says Rabbi Abba. This was the reason that Rish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan both agreed there's something wrong with the Mishnah. I don't understand. This is called something's wrong with the Mishnah. Why don't we simply say that in the ratio we were talking about with the inside teeth, and the second, the Sefer was talking about the outside teeth, and over there, you need to have three. Now, even though that suggests itself as referring to the inside and outside issue we were talking about before, the thick pieces at the edge of the comb, Rashi says that that's not the meaning. The meaning is that on wool comb, as I mentioned to you early, has two rows of teeth, and it has a big handle on it, and you pull it across the wool, and it has an upper layer of teeth and a lower layer of teeth. So basically, the way that Rashi understands it is that the main purpose of the row that is right underneath the handle, which he's calling over here, the outside, the main purpose of the outside is just to provide support that you don't rip down the whole piece of cloth that you're working on. But the real work on the fibers is actually done with the inside row. And that would be the difference. So because of that, just that to hold it, that it shouldn't move, you only need two teeth. And that was the meaning of the diak, that if you have two, it would be okay. Masha Enkin, for working on, you need to have the three. And that would mean that basically you need to have a total of five, is the mashmaut. That's what some of the acronyms say on the on Kaling. Because you need the two in the upper one, so to speak, in order to support the cloth itself. And then the work as you move the comb in and out, right? You've seen these kind of things. You push it on with the handle, and then you sort of move your hand up and down, and that does the combing. Then you move it down again, and then you do the same thing. So then if that's what it means, which is what Rashi seems to be saying, then you would obviously need to have two on top and three on the bottom. So he's calling the viata and the pnimit and the chitzonah. Okay, so, all right, that can't be the reason, because I can explain that away. That can't be the reason that Rabbi Yochanan says that this mission is messed up. But there's definitely a contradiction. The contradiction actually, go away from the wool comb, okay, because we answered that. Let's go back to the linen comb, all right? So over there, the Mishnah said, if any of those teeth were taken out and you use them one by one, they're all tmeot because they're useful as pins and as pipe cleaners and so on. Now that's mashma, that afagavda lo yitkina. You don't need to do anything in order for it to be usable. In other words, you don't need to have a little handle on it, okay? So then how do you explain the fact that then in the second part, the Mishnah said that if you take out one of these pins from, I keep saying pins, I mean one of the teeth they're called, I mean what to use as a pin. If you take out one and you heat kina and you set it up so that now it's usable for a pipe cleaner or as a pin, then and only then it's tmeya. Mashba, that you need to do an action. It's not enough to be mori b'machshava, and you need to change it so that it becomes usable. I mean, there's no difference, is there, between a pin? I mean, it's the same pin. So you have a pin in the flax comb and you have a pin in a wool comb. How come in the flax comb, you didn't need to be metakenet to use it as a pin or a pipe cleaner? And in the second case, you do. So that's a contradiction, right? Here it says, itkina in lo itkina lo. So therefore, it's not a good Mishnah. Come on, says Abai. I mean, that's a kasha to be done. Docha Mishnah to say zu ain't a Mishnah. I mean, for heaven's sakes, I can explain that. My kushy, what's the problem over here? Maybe we're talking about two different cases. Maybe the first case is telling you, Dilma Habikitayu. One is talking about where a piece broke off from the wooden base. So it was holding a pin in it. Fine. So then the little piece of wood on the bottom that originally was part of the entire comb still serves as a way for you to put the pin into the wall without puncturing your skin. Mashenke in the second part was talking about where you pulled out the pins, which makes sense because it was saying you took out every other pin. So, I mean, obviously over there, this story is a different story. You were making the entire comb differently by removing specifically every other one. So obviously it didn't just break. So there you've got loose pins. So you don't really have loose pins and you have to put something on the bottom in order to use them. Otherwise, how are you going to press on them without puncturing your skin? That's the point. Omer of Papa. If Papa says, I can tell you a very simple answer. You don't have to go that far. Umay Kusha. I mean, we're talking about different kind of teeth because we're talking about different kind of combs, for heaven's sakes. So if we said before that a flax comb is much grosser, right? And therefore, you don't need to have three at the same place. But by the same token, it also needs to have stronger teeth. Because if it needs to knock out all of that stuff, so then that means you don't have like a little tiny a needle-like piece of a tooth to make the pin. And therefore, it's fine. You can take it out. It's pretty broad. So you could, it's like a nail. So a nail, oftentimes, you press a nail in without having a big thing at the end of the nail. Masha Enkin, we were talking about the woolen comb. So the whole idea of the woolen comb is that it's much thinner, right? Because it's finer. So if it's finer, then it's going to puncture your skin. So it needs to be mutkan. What's the big deal? Any child can come up with these explanations. So there's absolutely nothing wrong with this mission. Okay, so now don't give me this. So why are you claiming? So now this Rav Nochum's really got poor Rabbi Abu in a bind. And the problem is that Rabbi Abu is a captive audience because he's leaning on Rav Nochum. So anyway, so what is the reason that over here we're not poskening like this Mishnah? Says, look, Rabbi Yochum and Reish Lakish, what they were talking was outside of the context of this little walk with Rav Nochum and Rabbi Abu. So let's think about what made them reject the Mishnah. The reason they rejected the Mishnah is because we've got these Dafkani people. Dafkani people are people that are very middayek to make sure they got the right gears and so on. Nowadays, they attend the JTS and stuff like that. But there were always Dafkanis where they spent their time getting the correct girsa. So if you want to know what the Dafkani do with this Mishnah, they have the Nusach of the Mishnah at the end reads as follows. Misayme ba Dafkani, the end of the Mishnah goes, quote, the above is Divrei Rabbi Shimon. So that means that the correct wording in the Mishnah is that the Mishnah was not a Stam Mishnah. The Mishnah pretended to be a Stam Mishnah if you don't know the end. But since Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish said that this is not a Mishnah, they didn't mean there's a problem with the Mishnah. They meant this is not a Stam Mishnah. You're asking for me. This is not a Stam Mishnah, because the correct siyum of the Mishnah is that all of the above is Divrei Rabbi Shimon. That's what they were saying. They didn't have a problem with the Mishnah. But anyway, there's obviously no longer a problem with Rabbi Abbo, because Rabbi Abbo is absolutely correct. If you have a Stam Mishnah like that, the fact that there's a Machlokas in the Braita is not going to make it not a Stam Mishnah. It's because the Mishnah itself said that it's not a Stam Mishnah. Okay. Anyway, getting back to our main topic, all of this has been tangential. Now we are no longer walking side by side with Rabbi Abbo and Rabbi Nachum listening into this discussion, and we are back to our Mishnah. So we've got three different shitas in the Mishnah about what the deal is with waiting these 3 months. So the question is, we had this machlokas, how does it apply in terms of erusin or nesuin? And that, those are two questions. How does it apply in terms of the woman who now wants to enter a new relationship? What was her relationship with her first husband? Was it a relationship of erusin, in which case she's not pregnant, or nesuin? And then there was on the other end, what is the status of the marriage that she wants to enter into now? Does she want to enter into erusin alone, in which case we don't have to be concerned that they're going to be sleeping together, he's going to get her pregnant, and then we don't know whose child it is? Or is this actually talking about where the new marriage that she wants to enter is a marriage of nesuin? So let's take all of that into consideration. So Rabbi Chiya Bar Avin, he sent halacha l'maisa as a tshuva, and he said like this: look, you can take a woman just for erusin. So you can give her a ring within 3 months after the husband dies, and that doesn't matter to me. And I have actually seen this done. So I'm telling you, this is a psak, this is halacha l'maisa, and maisa rav. I've seen kein osim ma'aseh, that if you are just going to give her a ring, and then she's allowed to accept that ring. That if you're going to wait, she doesn't need to wait. I said, I don't mean from the very beginning. I'm saying that during the 3rd month, it's okay. And basically, all we want is that she should wait most of the 1st month, the entire middle month, and then most of the 1st month and most of the 3rd month and the entire middle month. But she doesn't need to have a complete period of 3 months. Okay, so basically this is because Rabbi Chanina doesn't agree with Sumchas, and he says that you don't need the full 3 months if you're going to be doing one of the hormonal checks and you're looking at changes in the breasts or in the nipples. Those are things that show up even earlier, and therefore you do not need the full 3 months. Okay, it's a question of what this means. Does it literally mean that it should be along those lines, that people should get the feeling that there's 3 months, or is he just giving a number of days? That's a machlokas of how to understand Rabbi Chanina HaGadol. And Amemar actually was matir, not during the 3 months, but on the 90th day. So he said that we could use the concept of mitzvah sayom kukulo. So he obviously does not agree with Rabbi Chanina HaGadol, does not agree with the psak of Rabbi Chiya Bar Avin, but he has another issue. He says always we rely on mitzvah sayom kukulo. So over here we can also rely on mitzvah sayom kukulo, but that's only for erusin. Because obviously, if we're talking about a biological reality over here, not a psychological issue, because it makes it a yom kikulo. But since the whole idea of avoiding erusin, where we know that there's not a pregnancy problem, is a chumrah, so for that, we basically just, how do people look at it? So over there, we say it's okay if it's the mixes a yom kikulo. That's the only case. But you can't do nisui, you can only do erusin. How do you get away with that? Wasn't there a psak, both Rav and Shmuel? Well, Rav and Shmuel, that a woman whose husband died has to wait 3 full months, not including the day of her husband's death and not including the day that she actually goes into the Erisin. Erisin. And you're saying Erisin, you could say Mixiyom Kekulo. And over here, Rav Shmuel is saying you have to be Makbid on a full 30 days, 90 days between the 2 days. So how the heck do you get away with saying Mixiyom Kekulo? And Maymar says, because that's not what they said. What they said was in reference to nursing, and it was not in reference to pregnancy and Eris. You have it all mixed up. That I happen to know what happened over there. Rav and Shmuel both basket. This business that you're talking about, besides the day and besides the day, was said in a completely different context. It was said about a nursing mother, and that a nursing mother has to wait full 24 months of the nursing period before getting ahead with Erisin. And that does not include the day of birth. That's what you got confused. You applied that to the 3 month waiting period. This was said about the nursing period, because over there we're much more makbid because we're dealing with health issues, and health issues, there's no kind of compromises. So the child's health is the child's health. 24 months is 24 months. That excludes the day that he's born and excludes the day of the Erisin. But that was not the case in the 3 month wait. So the Gemara asks Abatua Meimar from an actual Maisa. And this Maisa, by the way, was brought by the Rabbeinu Tam earlier of similar cases where the Rabbeinu Tam blew up a whole $100,000 wedding by paskening that they couldn't use any of the stuff. So it was basically the same as the story over here. There was this guy who had made this immense Seudas Erisin. It wasn't even a real wedding because they weren't going to do a chuppah. You know, but he's one of these rich guys who could pay $100,000 for a tnoyim, you know. So anyway, so they went ahead and he sets up this whole thing and he's got all the meat out there and the waiters are coming. Anyway, Rava found out about it. And it was on the 90th day after the death of the first husband. And Rava blew the whole Suda into the yam. And that way, like, okay, well, I guess they gave a lot to the Salvation Army on that day, but there was no wedding. Says the Gemara, no, that wasn't the case. That was a real wedding. That wasn't a Sudas Erisin. That was a Sudas Nisuin. And the only thing that a Meimar had said was a Suda of Erisin. Anyway, halakha lemaisa, the nursing woman has to wait the 24 months, like Rabbi Shmuel reported her saying, not including the day of the birth and not including even in the day that she is going to do Erisin. And she, in the case of the 3 months is also, like it was reported originally in the name of Rav Shmuel, that a woman whose husband died has to wait 3 months before Erisin, not including the day of death, not including the day of the Erisin. So we're basically machmer on both of them, and then that would be true even in the case of a Megureshet, would also be. Then we had a machlokas before. I mean, does it go according to the writing of the get, or does it go according to giving of the get? That's something else. But in order to avoid that, we don't talk about the gerushin. Fine. But lemaisa, the idea is the same. We need the 3 months in between. Okay. Anyway, let's get back to the mission now. Let's try to get it straight because it's a little confusing. Because of what Rabbi Yossi said over there is that basically all women, he said, are allowed to be Nichnasim le'erisin. So they can go into mitarsot. Why? Because anyway, they're not going to be sleeping with their husband. And the only case where you can't is if she is an almana, and therefore she's got a problem of avelut for her husband. So because of the avelut, that's a different issue. It's not to do with havchana, it's just a different issue. You're not allowed to have a wedding during the period of the shloshim. Omer of Chista, I never heard of such a thing. I never heard that. I heard of not making weddings during Shloshim, but I never heard that there's an issur to accept Kiddushin during Shloshim. That doesn't make any sense. I mean, basically in the Yerushalmi, it says, as Tosis brings you can accept an Erisin, give an Erisin on Tisha B'Av because of the problem of Shema Yekadmenu Acher. So what are you going to do? You're going to lose your wife, the girl of your dreams, And I mean, that's like the biggest davar imaginable. So therefore, if he's afraid somebody's going to get there first, he is allowed to even be Mekadosh and Isha, just Mekadosh and Isha, obviously, but to be Mekadosh and Isha on Tisha B'Av. So why in the world can't you have Erisin during Shloshim? Where did that come from? In fact, said Rav Chisda, I mean, it's a Kal V'Chomer. That, look, there are times where you have the Shavua Shechal Bo Tisha B'Av. And the Shavua Shechal Bo Tisha B'Av, you're not allowed to do any laundry, right? So it's a Mokum Sha'asu L'Chabez. The halacha is that you are allowed to give Kiddushin, Erisin. So then, if a place we're talking about over here, the Shloshim, there is no Isser of Kivus for Avelut during Shloshim. So then, for sure, you should be able to do the Erison. So I don't understand why is it that we are being more Machmer. Doesn't make any sense. I mean, it must be Erison is not considered to be so much an act of Simcha that we're going to Aser it if we were Mater it even during the time of the of immediately before Tisha B'Av, of that week of Tisha B'Av. So how do you explain that? It makes no sense that Rabbi Yossi would say that an Almana can't accept Erison. I just want to know. I mean, you're making these statements. Where do you get these statements from? Mahi, what are you basing all this on? What are you referring to? Which case? No, I'll tell you the case. It's for heaven's sakes, it's a Mishnah. You should know the Mishnah. We have the Mishnah in Tainis. It says over there that the Shabbat Shechal Tisha B'Av Betocha. So during that Shavua, where Tisha B'Av comes out, it's usher to get a haircut and it's usher to do laundry. But in the event that Tisha B'Av comes out on Erev Shabbos, so over there, it's mutter to do laundry because otherwise you won't have any time to do the laundry before Tisha B'Av. So because if the Tisha B'Av's on a Friday, and then it's going to be Shabbos. You're going to be able to do laundry for Shabbos. So b'nei kvod on Shabbos, you're allowed to do the laundry before Tisha B'Av. Fine. Okay. So if that's the case, then it's telling us that the week before Tisha B'Av, kivus is awesome. But a braita says, kodem hazman hazeh. Now in the braita, we're assuming that kodem hazman hazeh means that before Tisha B'Av, in other words, during that week, where Tisha B'Av is Chal, so Zman Azaz Tisha B'Av, and Kodem Azman is the week, so then Ha'amimatim Biskehem, you should be doing less business. You should be doing less lease of elite and less financial things. They shouldn't be planting. This, of course, we're coming out over there, if you recall. We're talking about an Atiyah Shal Simcha, Avurnakisha Malachim, Milifnot is a Binyan Shal Simcha, a place which you're going to be using for Chatnut Beno, and Ma'arsin, take this, Ma'arsin Avalokonsin. So you are allowed to give Kiddushin, but not Nisuin. Ve'enosin Su'udat Erisin. You're not allowed to make a big Su'udah, even though you could do the Erisin, but you can't jazz it up with your orchestra over there at a big feast, whatever, and that you can't do. Okay. Therefore, says Rav Chisda, what do we see over here? That in the Shavua Shechal Bo Tisha B'Av, you're allowed to accept Erisin as long as you don't make a big suda. So then it's a Kal V'Chomer over here that during Shloshim, where it's mutter to do kibbutz. So Koshikain, you can do Erisin. No, you didn't understand. Ach, Kodem Azman Hazeh doesn't mean Kodem Tisha B'Av. Kodem Azman Hazeh is before the above mentioned time of Shavua Shechal Bo Tisha B'Av. So in other words, before the Shavua Shechal Bo Tisha B'Av, you're going to be Machmer from Rosh Chodesh. That's what we're saying. So before that time, you're allowed to do Erisin. That's the point. But then you're also allowed to do laundry. So you no longer have a Kal V'Chomer. The time when the laundry is mutter is the time when the Erisin is mutter. The time when the laundry is usher, maybe the Erisin is usher too. You don't have a Kal V'Chomer. Omar Rav, you still have a Kal V'Chomer. You don't have a Kal V'Chomer from laundromats, yes, but you do have a Kal V'Chomer from the issue of commercial activities. Because I'll restate it. Kodem de kodem nami Kal V'Chomer. Here's my Kal V'Chomer. Uma b'makom sha'asur lisav v'litein. We said that if you're talking about the kodem hazman hazeh, you're saying that means kodem, meaning the week before the week Shechal Bo Tisha B'Av, from Rosh Chodesh, right? And it says over there that it's usher to go into too many new kinds of commercial deals. nonetheless, you are allowed to be me'aretz. So a makom where you're allowed during the shleishim of an avelut, you're allowed to do commercial things. So eino din shemutar le'areisa, for sure, you should have no problem of eresin. So something is wrong if the Mishnah is claiming that according to Rabbi Yossi, we don't allow a woman who is in avelut to accept eresin, then it doesn't fit with the dinim of avelus that we know about of shloshim. So what's going on? Says the Gemara, you're right. Okay, so then what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to change our Mishnah a little bit. Here's the correct way to read it. Do not read when he said, kol anashim yitarsu, because you're right. He can't say all women can accept eresin except for the avela, because you just proved that an avela can accept eresin. So now we're going to have to change it to say all women except for the avela during her shloshim on the death of her husband can actually get married. They can do nisuin. Ooh. Oh boy, now this is revolutionary in Rabbi Yossi. I mean, until now, we understood that Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda were saying the same thing, and that you cannot, if you were possibly pregnant and you were in the su'a before, you cannot enter nisuin because we're worried about havchana, right? Now we're saying, well, actually what Rabbi Yossi was saying is that you are allowed to even enter into the relationship of nisuin. And when he was saying, except for Namana, because he could only be referring to nisuin, we have no choice but to say he's referring to nisuin. But that would mean that Rabbi Yossi never said anything about eresin during avelus, because, of course, as we just showed, there is no problem of eresin during avelut, as we just proved from Tisha B'Av. But that would be crazy, because according to this, Rabbi Yossi is saying, all women, this is kol anashim, all women, meaning even if she was previously a nisua, all women are allowed to become nisuot. But that's impossible, because then what are we going to do about the issue of the havchana? How are we going to know whose child it is? So what are you saying? You're saying now that Rabbi Yossi does not hold that we need to know whose child it is? Like we're throwing out everything that we took down for granted and nobody's arguing with? Let leila Rabbi Yossi lafchin? I guess. Ibaitema letle. You could try to say that. Or ibaitema actually liolam itle. And we're going to have to modify Rabbi Yossi further. And instead of saying that kol hanashim are able to be nasu chutz bina almana, actually what Rabbi Yossi said is that kol arusot girushot, all women who were only arusot, they, if they're not also almanot, but they're only grushot, they can go ahead and enter into nisuin. That's because they're not pregnant, because they were only arusot. But if they were nisuot, then they would not be able to go ahead and be nisuot. And that way he could hold, except, of course, for one very big problem. And that is that there's no din of an arusa being an avela on her dead husband. So that's a problem the Gemara is going to discuss later. Okay, but right now we're trying to fix Rabbi Yossi, and that leads us into another issue. Okay, so then he's just repeating what Rabbi Yehuda said. It's exactly what Rabbi Yehuda said. Rabbi Yehuda said that if you only had a relationship of arusa, that you could go ahead and you could marry b'nisuin. That's exactly. So we mean, but Rabbi Yossi says, and let's say the same thing. So Yochi Einu de Rabbi Yehuda. No, but there's one difference between them. Because remember that the difference between a Nesu'a and an Arusa is in both directions. What was the status of her original marriage? Nesu'a or Arusa? Question A. Question B. What is the marriage that she intends to enter now? Erisin or Nesu'in? Okay. That's where there's going to be a difference. So the difference would be if previously she was a nisua. So Rabbi Yehuda said if she was a nisua before, then she can go ahead and do erisin. Because Rabbi Yehuda says either way, we're not going to be gozer. Maybe people will confuse erisin with nisuin. If we allow erisin, they'll do nisuin. And if we allow from Arison, well, they will allow from the Sukkah. People are not so stupid. Okay. So therefore, according to Rabbi Yehuda, if she was previously in her first marriage, a Nesu'ah, she can now enter a new semi-marriage, so to speak, of Arison alone, in which she will not be sleeping with this man. But Rabbi Yossi says it doesn't work in both directions. It only works in one direction, and that is that a Nesu'ah cannot go ahead and take Arison. Only an Arusa can go ahead and take Nisuin. I will explain why that's true. But it's a one-directional issue. Therefore, Rabbi Yossi is not agreeing with Rabbi Yehuda. And he's not simply repeating Rabbi Yehuda, except that's not what it says in the Braita. You're telling me Rabbi Yossi asers a Nisua just to do Arison? But the Braita says, Rabbi Yossi Omer, Kol Hanashim Yitarsu, any woman, whether she's coming from the Suin or whether she's coming from Arison, she is allowed to become an Arusa. The only one who cannot is the Almana, because she's got an Avelut that she's got to worry about, and therefore it's not allowed for her to get married. But that doesn't mean the whole time, because how long is Avelut that prevents marriage? Only 30 days. So kama ibul shala shloshim yom. All women who were nisuot, they cannot enter nisuin unless they have the 3 months which are necessary for havchana. So how are you trying to tell me that Rabbi Yossi is arguing with Rabbi Yehuda and that he says that a nisuah cannot get married even with Arison if it says otherwise here? Can you show me where it says otherwise here? I mean, I saw the way you tried reading it. I'd like to see how you know how to read it. Where do you see in this Braita that it says otherwise? I mean, is it because it says, Rabbi Yossi Omer, Kol Anashim Yitarsu? And Kol Anashim must mean even the ones that were Nesuot. Look, we had exactly that language in the Mishnah, right? The Mishnah also said that kulam are mutarot li ares, right? And we changed that, and we said it means, lashon over there is an arusa. So we said what it means, all women who are coming from Arison, they are allowed to enter into nisuin. That's how we changed it. We said instead of kol hanashim yitarsu, we said kol hanashim is meant to be nitarsu. And then we said, Kol Anashim, that were Nesu'ot, can only enter into Arison. So you can do the same thing in the Braitas. Don't ask me from that. If you're ready to change the Mishnah, I mean, why doesn't that vague language can be changed to fit? Okay, so we can say the same thing here in the Braitas. Kol Arusot, Rushot, Yinasu. Fine. Now, what about, you're trying to tell me, okay, read on. Look at the Braitas said over here, that kulam lo yinasu ad shilam shlosh chodashim. No women, which understandably would mean any woman who was a nisuah, cannot enter nisuah without 3 months. But that means she's only not allowed to get married with nisuin in suviyu de lo. But she would be allowed to be an arusa. And you claimed that according to Rabbi Yossi, she's not allowed. Even if she's only going to Arison, she's not allowed. So how can you read this into Rabbi Yossi? On my Rava, you can, because you need to change it to read like this. Taritz ve'imahoch, Rabbi Yossi Omer, kol arusot yirushot are allowed to enter nisuin, except, of course, for the almana, because the almana has got a problem of avilut. Now here, we're running into a big problem again, because we're claiming that the way to read it is that an arusa, if she's an almana, can't get married because there's avelut. But there is no avelut on an arusa. So we're going to have to explain that. But anyway, but in terms of the language, we could always say this is what it means. And then we'll have to explain why it's true that an arusa, not a nesua, an arusa is a grusha. She is allowed to get married except if she has avelut. And how long is the avelut shela? Shloshim yom. But someone who was a nisuah, she is not allowed even to get Arison until Shloshim Yom. That would be the way to do it. And what would be the explanation? So the explanation is, if you're talking about the way people look at it, they are not going to mix up Erisin and Nisuin. But if you're talking about the way this particular woman is going to act, and you tell this particular woman, you can go in and get married, just make sure that it's only Erisin, not Nisuin. She don't know what the heck you're talking about. And she figures if she can get married, she can get married. So she's going to go and she'll become a Nisua. And therefore, she's going to end up destroying our ability to be mafkin between the child of the first husband and the second husband. So we're not going to rely on that. So in other words, even though I agree with Reb Yehuda, and theoretically, if I could assure that this woman who was previously a Nisua is only going to be an Arus, I would have agreed with him on that too, except that I hold that I am very worried about Avchana, and I don't want to tell an individual you can get married when getting married might mean to her that she can go and sleep with her husband and wreck our entire requirement of being able to tell the difference between the zera of the husband and the zera of the second husband. So therefore, this I disagree with. That's how we're going to reinterpret it now. Except that we're left with this problem, and that is that now you're claiming that an almana, even though she was only an arusa, is not allowed to get married because she's an avela. But she's not an avela, darn it. So what are you talking about? An almana and an erisin? There's no evil on a husband. Vatani Rabbi Chiya Bar Ami, a woman who is married to someone as an arusa, and the husband dies, she does not become an onen, and he is not an onen on her. If he's a kohen, he's not metame for her because she is not his full wife yet. And it's true in the other direction too. She is not onenet on him. This would be no gea, the question of whether she allowed to eat maaser sheni or whatever, right? And also she's not mechuyev to go to his funeral, velo metamalo, or maybe we saw this before. Maybe it means she's not allowed to become Tamea because it's in the middle of Yontif and you're mechuyev to remain tar during Yontif, whatever. I don't know whether it means she doesn't have to, she's not allowed to, but whatever the point is, she's not his real wife. She's not metamet to him. And if she dies, he doesn't inherit her. And if he dies, she's still, and he wrote her ksuva, obviously. I mean, he didn't have to write her ksuva, but if he did, so then she could collect her ksuva. But anyway, the bottom line is, there is no din of avelut and an arusa. So how could you explain that Rabbi Yossi's statement, which nobody tried to say and misrepresent as not addressing the difference between the woman who is an avela, that is to say, whose husband died, versus the woman who got a get? I mean, that he definitely said. So that basically restricts the interpretation to a nisua, because in arus, so there would be no such difference. So all of this rigmarole that we're going through over here to ostensibly change Rabbi Yossi into a reference to a nisua instead of an arusa instead of a nisua does not add up. Okay, says the Gemara, I've dropped, right? I've dropped. Fine. So therefore, we're going to have to say that he said what he said originally. Nisuin is okay to go into Erisin. That's true. All right. So the only problem is that the Almana, she can't go to Erisin. So then we have the question we had before. It says Beferish that Rabbi Yossi doesn't have a problem with Erisin during Shloshim. So why would we have a problem with the Almana from the Nisuin because of her Avelut, if she's only going to accept the Erisin? So then that's what started us running around here trying to find an answer, and now we're back to where we started. So what's the solution? Well, what we'll have to say, that this question of whether Erisin is Mutter before Tisha B'Av is actually a Machlokas Tanoi. Maybe that's why it's not a Kal V'Chomer. D'Tanya, from Rosh Chodesh Av, now this is a whole different idea. So now this Brisa says, from Rosh Chodesh all the way until Tisha B'Av, Ha'am Mimatimi is Kehem, you're not allowed to get into business, merely suddenly attain, you're not allowed to plant, meaning Shal Simcha, you're not allowed to bone, meaning Shal Simcha, as we came out over there. And now dig this, Umili Ares Umili Sa, and you're not allowed to do Erisin. Now, the Shabbat Shechal Bo Tisha B'Av, that's the next greater Chumrah. Over there, you're usher in haircuts, usher to do the laundry, and some say you're usher to do the laundry or haircuts the whole month. Anyway, So then this brisa is chalak on the other brisa. This brisa says that Erusin is actually usher during the period from Rosh Chodesh on. So I guess Rabbi Yossi agrees with this. And so according to Rabbi Yossi, there's no kal v'chomer. Rabbi Yossi says, listen, the brisa says it's a simcha to do Erusin. And therefore, I'm telling you that if she is an amana min ha-nisuin, for 30 days, she cannot pop into an Erusin relationship because it's the same as Tisha B'Av. How do you know it when it says Erusin is Osir? It means just accepting the Erusin, and that it's arguing on the brisa before. Maybe over here it's talking about to make a Suda of Erusin. A Suda, I understand, is Osir, but just to accept the Erusin, I mean, why should I make a machlokas between the brises? If I can say, I mean, that brisa also said there's a difference between a se'udas erisin and just I'm accepting money from the guy or ring from a guy without turning it into a big deal. So therefore, there doesn't need to be a stira between these brises, and that would mean that Rabbi Yossi doesn't have what to be senechan. We're back to our kal v'chomer. It should be mutter to be accepting erisin during the period of the 30 days of the avelus that this nesua has on her husband. Nah, says, I can't mean that in the braita. Because then if you're using the word mila ares, you're saying that it means making a wedding, make a big deal. So then when it says milisa, it's only asering making a big wedding celebration. That's what's asering. You're telling me that just to go to the chuppah, that's not us. I mean, that's not true. Certainly, it's a simcha, and that you're not going to be matter going to the chuppah in the week before Tisha B'Av, are you? So then the braita must be referring to just the erusin itself, just like it was referring just to the nesuin itself. Says Rav Ashi, I'm not impressed with this argument. I mean, because the braita could be leaving it up to the intelligent reader. I mean, look, nisuin obviously is going to be also without a su'udah because there's still joy that's involved in taking the woman to the chuppah and having a wife and going to your home and living together. I mean, that's the simcha. Even if you don't make a big su'udah, mashenke, giving a ring, all that you're doing is looking at your credit card bill. So erusin below nisuin, where's the simcha in that? Mihika simcha? All you did was make sure nobody else gets her. Now you could start worrying like, oh, chasanim, did I make a big mistake? And fine, but where's the simcha? Okay. And that is, I mean, much better, I think, than making a machlokas between two brises when it doesn't say that there's a machlokas. Okay, so then we've got a problem. If it's not a machlokas, then we have a kal v'chomer that Rava just made and that there is no problem of taking erusin during the shloshim yemei avelut of this nesua on her husband. That we're back where we started again. Ela amar Ravashi. Ravashi says, look, this idea of making kal v'chomer from Tisha B'Av is not much of a kal v'chomer. There's a big difference between a personal avelut, which just now has happened. Her husband just dropped dead of a heart attack, and Tisha B'Av. Okay, there's a difference between an avelut chadasha, which there's still the emotional shock of the Avelut. The shock of the Avelut is more chomor than by Tisha B'Av, where we're trying to recreate the shock by talking about Eicha, how could this be? How, you know, we keep repeating how it could be. And basically, people are bored to death and are saying, Eicha, God, it's so late. We have to read Eicha again. Anyway, so obviously there's going to be a difference, not to mention the fact that there's another difference. And the other difference is that the more people are sharing your pain, the less painful it is. And we say, Sarat Rabim Chatzi Nechama, right? So over here, this woman, her husband just dropped dead of a heart attack yesterday, saying, well, I mean, for Tisha B'Av, it would be okay. Thank you very much. Over there, everybody is an Avel, together with her. And this is an old issue that I'm not in the shock mode. So shiny, first of all, Avelut Chadashami, Avelut Nishana. And the shock per se is part of the chumrah of the avelut. And there's a big difference between avelut derabim, which is less chumrah because you're surrounded by people in the same situation. And therefore, you don't find it as acutely personal and intimate. And it's different than avelut derabim from an avelut yachid. And that would be why Arison may be mutter with that and make a kavachomer from here till tomorrow. It still is not going to address the difference that Rabbi Yossi holds and that it's inappropriate for an avela within 30 days of the sudden death of her husband to make a kavachomer from Tisha B'Av that she's allowed to accept Arison. And with that, we leave it. So we have our original understanding of the Mishnah, and now everything goes back to being fine.